It's coming up for 7 minutes after 9 o'clock. Hello, good evening, welcome. If you've just joined us, this is the second half of the Karima Brown Show. You are, of course, listening to 702. This is the part of the program where you get to have your say. The number to dial, 011-883-0702. You can also SMS us on 31702 and WhatsApp us on 072-702-1702. Coming up in terms of the content of this part of the show, we look at the situation in our northern neighbor, Zimbabwe. We'll be speaking with Ibrahim Fakir, who's a political analyst. And then we get into another commission of inquiry that got underway. And that's, of course, into the fitness of two top national prosecuting authority officials to hold office. We will be speaking with Karen Morn, specialist reporter and journalist at TISO Blackstar. But let's kick off in Zimbabwe. As protests continue in Zimbabwe following a dramatic petrol price hike, news has emerged that South Africa turned down a loan request from its cash-strapped neighbours for a 16.7 billion rand loan in December. We heard this from spokesperson for the Finance Ministry, Mr. Jabulani Sikhakhani. The Daily Maverick had reported that Finance Minister Tito Mboweni stated that South Africa is planning to extend a short-term credit to Zimbabwe and also to help it write off its external debt. Zimbabwe has been hit by anti-government protests last week after a hike in fuel prices stoked anger over an economic crisis. These protests were violently suppressed by the state security forces, and government also shut down the connection to the internet. And of course, the courts in Zimbabwe today found that the army chief had no legal right to do so. Well, to tell us more about the situation, I'm joined on the line by Ibrahim Fakir. He is a political analyst and the director of programs at the Owl Social Economic Research Institute, also known as ASRI. Ibrahim, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Hi, good evening, Karima. Nice to chat to you again.
Okay, now before we get into the kind of big politics of the matter, I just want you to tell me the optics of what it is that you saw. You have a sister who lives in Zimbabwe. You went and visited her. What did it feel like? What are people's experiences? What did you see in the shops? How do you characterize Zimbabwe?
Well, Clement, I mean, there's only one word to characterize it, and I think that would be difficult. And that's the only word that comes to mind. It's difficult. Life for ordinary people, even for life for people in the middle classes, are difficult. You know, you get some semblance of normality. So what strikes you is the number of big vehicles and 4x4s on what are, in effect, completely dilapidated roads. But you've got people driving around in these big cars with petrol and here's the second problem, is about the question of, from a policy perspective, the question of parallel markets.
Yes.
And foreign exchange pricing. So you then wonder, how do these people afford these cars?
Yes.
Particularly, how do they afford the petrol to drive around? And you come to realize, well, the story says that if you say in rand equivalent, it's 45 rand a litre petrol. It isn't really, because 45 rand a litre petrol is calculated on the price of petrol in which the dollar is given a parity equivalent to a Zimbabwean dollar, which, as we know, doesn't exist.
No, of course, yes.
So this is all electronic and mythical and numbers and stuff which exists in the...
No, don't worry. Peter Thornycroft explained it in great detail now the other evening. I mean, they've got four different ways of making payments in Zimbabwe. I mean, it's absolutely crazy.
And depending on which mode you use, the price would therefore effectively change. But in reality, let's put it this way. The real value of a litre of petrol is still quite high. It's not quite as 45 rand, but it is on the informal market, if you do a real calculation, or the real market price would be equivalent to 17 rand. a litre, which is still woefully expensive.
Absolutely. I mean, I have friends in Zimbabwe who own cars, and they're walking to school because they just can't afford it. And like you say, this is for people who actually have work. We know that joblessness in Zimbabwe is at crisis proportions. What about things like food shortages and stuff like that?
You're talking firstly about an 80% unemployment rate.
Yeah.
The real unemployment rate is close to 80%.
Mm.
Then there's also what I would call a form of informal rationing. So, for instance, if you go to a supermarket and you wish to buy certain items, so, for example, a bag of flour or a block of cheese, you might be told in a particular store that we would sell you a bag of flour or a block of cheese, provided you buy $20 worth of other things.
Okay.
So you first got to buy a bunch of other things to a specified value.
Before you can get what you really need.
Or what you really want, yeah.
Yeah.
And I suppose want is not quite the word. I think it is need. You're right. It's what you need, not what you want. Because very few people can get what they want. So that's the second problem. And that compounds the kind of pinch that is felt by ordinary people. Because now, if you want only a block of cheese or some margarine or butter or milk, but you don't have the $20 to spend on other things. You are basically being compelled to buy a bunch of things you don't really need or want in order to get the thing you want or need. And that's the absurdity of the situation. Then, of course, there's the third problem, and I think we shouldn't fall prey to this, is that, look, there's a lot of rumor-mongering. There's a lot of stories being spread. There's a lot of hype which is created. And sometimes, lo and behold, you'd get a slew of messages on one night. And you'd find, about things which are about to happen or which are impending. And the very next day, you'd find that actually, even though the situation is difficult, there is a semblance of normality.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that the state security has cracked down quite severely on protesters. In fact, Mnangagwa has cut his trip to Russia short and is saying that resistance will be met with a fierce action on the side of the police. This is a short-term strategy. I mean, it cannot work. Lots of people talk about the fact that ZANU-PF is divided. There's a fight between Mnangagwa and the head of the army. The opposition doesn't look in a good state either.
Sure.
Professor Brian Raftopoulos, who's a veteran Zimbabwean analyst, was saying now the other night that the situation is extremely fluid, and what you need now is actually mature leadership. But does that exist in your estimation, Ibrahim, in terms of both the factions in ZANU-PF as well as in the opposition?
Look, I'm afraid there isn't mature leadership. And I hate to say that Mnangagwa comes from a school, what I would call the Mugabe school of government.
Yes.
Because his assumption is that the Kakhdada heavy-handed approach to dealing with these protests is the way to go.
Yeah.
Of course, his policy trajectory is also to say, I want to get back, I want to get the country working, and I want to get the country growing. Well, the reality is you can't work and grow until you stabilize.
Yeah.
So I have a degree of sympathy with the deputy president's position. And the deputy president's position, which also, it's within ZANU-PF, but he's saying, let us just be realistic to try and clamor back a degree of stability and aid. And the only thing that's going to help us now is aid. And so create what was mooted under Mugabe, and which did happen for a period under his administration, a government of national unity.
Yes, everyone is talking about a national dialogue or conversation that needs to happen.
Yeah, well, some of them are pushing it further by saying we need to go beyond the dialogue and actually create a third structure, create the position of a prime minister, and let the opposition have the position of prime minister so that we can find some kind of consensus way going forward. We can be able to buy some sympathy from aid, and we might then be able to stabilize before we can do anything else. But let's not lose sight of the fact that international powers have their own interests about what should happen in Zimbabwe. So, for example, if you take the Chinese are now reluctant to provide large amounts of aid or any kind of financial transfers, simply because they've got what they want to get out of the country.
Yes.
They've got their whole and mineral resources to the extent that they need.
Yeah.
Now, they believe that they might be able to get first dibs on things like infrastructure development.
Mm.
But the Russians are interested in that as well.
Yes.
And the Chinese are thinking, unlike Tanzania, if these guys default on anything, there isn't a port we can take over.
Yes.
There isn't existing infrastructure that we can simply take over. So there's no incentive for us to do anything here.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, growth in China is slowing down. It has to be a lot more prudent about how it goes about investing. Ibrahim, thank you so very much for coming on to the program. That was political analyst and the director of programs at the OWL Socioeconomic Research Institute, also known as ASRI.